He was an artist. Such things as happened to him happen sometimes to artists. He was a German. Such things as happened to him happen sometimes to Germans. He was young, studious, enthusiastic, metaphysical, reckless, unbelieving, heartless. And being young, handsome, and eloquent, he was beloved.
The Cold Embrace by Mary Braddon, dramatized for radio by Christopher Hawes, with Stephanie Turner as Mary Braddon and Jonathan Firth as Yosef.
Do you love me?
Shh.
But do you?
I swear I do. Here. Come to me. Here.
Oh, yes.
There.
Yes.
Do I love her? Yes. Yes, when I swear it to her, by all means I do. Look. Look. The romantic city of Brunswick at rosy sunset. The holy moonlight. This beautiful dream of love. Who wouldn't love a woman at a moment like this?
What is it?
I was thinking...
What were you thinking?
My guardian, my Uncle Wilhelm.
Yes?
Let us keep our engagement secret for now.
But why? He'd rather you married someone with money.
No! Well, yes, I rather think he would. Oh, don't look so sad.
I am sad.
Don't be. Here. And here. Look.
Oh, it's...
Let me put it on your finger.
It's beautiful.
It belonged to my mother. A serpent eating its own tail. The symbol of eternity, a tail in the mouth. See how it entwines your finger now. Your slender finger.
It's exquisite.
I've never seen another like it, not in all the jewelers' shops of all the cities I've seen. And I'd know it anywhere. Even if I were to become blind tomorrow, I could select it from amongst 1,000.
Swear we'll always be true to each other.
I do swear, forever and ever.
Through trouble and danger.
In sorrow and in change.
In wealth or in poverty.
Well, tell your father and my uncle by and by.
We are betrothed now, aren't we? Truly. Till death us do part.
How could even death part us? I'd come back to you from the grave, my Gertrude. My very soul would return to be with my love. And you, if you died before me, even the cold earth wouldn't hold you from me. If you loved me, you'd return to me. You'd come and clasp your arms about my neck like you do now.
No, that's wrong. If I'm up in heaven and at peace with God, I shall be happy. I won't want to return unless...
Unless what?
Unless I were to kill myself, of course. Then the angels would shut me out of paradise forever. I'd have to come back and haunt the footsteps of the living.
What nonsense you talk.
You do love me.
I swear it. I have received a commission.
A commission?
To make some copies of paintings for a rich man who isn't quite so rich, and so that he may pretend to his friends that he really does own a Raphael, a Titian, a Guido. I have to go to Florence.
So far away?
No, I must make a living.
Yes.
For us. For our future.
Yes.
The time will soon pass. I'll write every day.
The first year of the betrothal is past, and she is alone. The real despair has come at last, and will not be put off any more. The lover wrote often at first, yes, every day, as promised, then seldom. Nowadays, not at all. How many times she goes to the distant little post office.
Good morning, miss.
Is there any mail for me today?
I'm afraid not, miss.
No letter from Florence?
No, miss.
Surely there must be by now.
No, nothing, miss.
I shall come again tomorrow.
Whatever you wish, miss.
I do wish. There will be a letter from Florence tomorrow.
Gertrude, my dear.
Yes, father?
I miss the boy too, you know.
Yes, father.
He's become almost a son to me.
Yes.
But remember, you are only cousins.
I know that.
I hope your sadness is no more than a cousin ought to feel for a cousin's absence.
It is not, father.
I'm most relieved to hear it. My dear.
Yes, father?
The English Duke.
Yes.
You know that he respects you, he admires
you. So you tell me.
He is impatient for an answer.
I have an answer for him.
You would not, I know, wish to make an answer that would displease me.
No, father.
I cannot in conscience keep him waiting any longer, nor can you. I am determined in this matter, Gertrude. It will be best for all of us.
Better for you, a rich man.
The wedding day is fixed, the 15th of June. The date seems burnt into her brain. The date, written in fire, dances forever before her eyes. The date, shrieked by furies, sounds continually in her ears. But there is time yet. It is the middle of May. There is time for a letter to reach him at Florence.
There is yet time for you to come to me. Oh, come to me, my love. To take me away and marry me in spite of father, in spite of the English Duke, in spite of the whole wide world.
But the days and weeks fly by. No letter comes. He does not come. It is the 14th of June. For the last time she goes to the little post office.
No, miss. Nothing from Florence, miss.
But there must be. There must be.
Sorry, miss.
No, no, no! No more entreaties!
I do not love the English Duke!
I will not have my wishes countermanded. Your wedding will take place tomorrow. It will not be put off for a single day, hour, minute, second.
I have tonight, though, father.
Make the most of it, for it is the last evening you have to employ as you may wish.
She decides to take her favourite walk that evening. She then takes another path than that which leads home, through some by-streets of the city, out to a lonely bridge.
Where he and I stood so often in the sunset, watching the rose-coloured light glow, fade and die upon the river.
Poor letter, stained with her tears.
You are cruel.
So entreating, so despairing.
You loved her once.
No, hardly at all. But now...
Yes?
I have been utterly bewitched by you. If she has a rich man to marry her, all the better for her. And for myself. She's off my conscience now, at any rate.
What conscience? You have none.
I have no wish to fetter myself with a wife.
Ah. So?
I have my art. Only art is my eternal bride, my unchanging mistress.
Shall you return to Brunswick?
Not yet. Not till I can safely salute the bride.
You are quite heartless.
Even the cold earth wouldn't hold you from me. If you loved me, you'd return to me.
Joseph? You hear me?
The silly dreams of boyhood. Gone.
So, on the 15th of June, he does enter Brunswick, by that very bridge on which she stood, the stars looking down on her, the night before. He strolls across the bridge, and down by the water's edge, his great rough dog at his heels.
Leo! Here!
And the smoke from his meerschaum pipe curling in blue wreaths fantastically in the pure morning air.
Leo!
I shall make a sketch. Now, let's see what intriguing object presents itself to the artist's eye. Those weeds there? No. Those pebbles on the river's brink, perhaps. That crag on the opposite shore there. That group of pollarded willows in the distance. A pleasant enough composition. Now, there's something much more interesting. That group of figures, what's going on? It's not a funeral. There aren't any mourners. It's not a funeral, but... yes, a corpse lying on a stretcher. Covered with an old sail, carried between two bearers. Not a funeral, the bearers are fishermen. Yes, fishermen in their everyday garb. And now they rest their burden on the riverbank. A fisherman stands at the head of the bier. A man throws himself down weeping at the foot of it.
My daughter!
They make such a perfect group study. Yes. Select the point of sight. There. Sketch in a hurried outline. There. In just a few skillful lines, I have the essence of it. You have a body there?
Washed ashore an hour ago.
Drowned?
Yes, drowned. Young girl. Very handsome.
Suicides are always handsome.
The sharp outline of the corpse. The stiff folds of the rough canvas covering. Yes.
Life is such a holiday for this young man. Young, ambitious, clever. It seems as though he thinks sorrow and death could have no part whatever in his destiny.
I'll come and make a sketch of her, since, as you say, she's so young and so handsome.
All the same to me, sir. Do as you like.
Shall I remove the sailcloth, sir?
Oh, I'll do it myself. There.
He lifts the rough, coarse, wet canvas from the face. The face.
My God. Features. Rigid. Arms like marble hands crossed on the cold bosom, and on the third finger of the left hand, the ring. The ring like a serpent that was my mother's. The golden serpent.
You were right, sir.
Which, if I were to become blind, I could select from 1,000 others by touch alone.
But he is such a genius, this young man. A genius and a metaphysician. Grief, true grief, is not for such as he. His first thought is...
I must fly. Fly anywhere out of this accursed city, anywhere far from the brink of that hideous river. Anywhere. Away from memory, away from remorse, anywhere, anywhere to forget.
He is miles on the road that leads away from Brunswick before he realizes he has run a step.
I'm sorry, my friend. Here, we'll have a rest. Here on this bank by the roadside. Let us put away all thoughts of that image, that thing covered with a damp canvas sail. Come here, boy. You're a good friend.
Idly playing with his dog, idly smoking, idly lounging, as any light-hearted travelling student might look. At last, he grows a little more composed and tries to think of himself.
And apart from my cousin's suicide... well, after all, I'm no worse off than I was yesterday, am I? My genius is not gone. The money I earned in Florence still lines my pocketbook. I am my own master, free to go where I wish. And here, just as providentially, happens along the old stagecoach.
I say, Postilion! I say, stop, stop!
You wish to join the coach, sir? Plenty of room inside, sir.
Yes, thank you. I do so wish.
During the whole evening's journey, through the long night, though he does not close his eyes, he never speaks a word. But when morning dawns and the other passengers awake...
You're travelling far, sir?
To the fair city of Cologne, my dear sir. And from thence I journey on to Antwerp, where I shall make a copy of a wonderful picture by Quentin Matsys. A masterpiece for a rich client of mine and a great deal of money. I am, you see, sir, as you will have gathered, an artist of considerable renown.
Are you quite well, sir?
Why? Don't I look it?
Frankly, sir, you do not.
Why should I not be perfectly well? I am an artist, a man of genius. Those ailments that affect other mortals are of little interest to me. I am on my way to the fair city of Cologne.
You have already told me, sir. Several times. May I open this window? May I suggest that you push your head through and take several draughts of fresh air? And that next time you drink, take some water with you.
Damn you.
Oh, the air in my face. Oh, the wind singing in my ears. Fields and roadside reeling and spinning in front of my eyes. I feel... Oh.
And he falls, a lifeless heap, onto the floor of the carriage. It is a fever that keeps him for 6 long weeks lying on a bed in a hotel at Aix-la-Chapelle.
It's the river, isn't it, flowing under the bridge at Brunswick? The river washes everything away, my darling, till there's nothing. No more pretty hair, pretty lips, pretty eyes all gone, leaving just... What? What goes next? The skin? The flesh? Muscles? Veins? Then what? What's left to look at after all that goes? Bone. Yes, bone. A skull where your pretty face was, sockets where your eyes shone so when you looked at me. Turn your head now, my love, to look at me. A death's head grin where your lips were. Kiss me. No, 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 no!
And finally he gets well again, and accompanied by his dog, starts off on foot for Cologne.
I am my former self again. The blue smoke from my pipe curls up into the evening air.
He is happy again and has quite forgotten his cousin.
Great cathedral. Magnificent pile that it is. I shall make a sketch of it. Such perfection of architectural form.
He is not thinking of his drowned cousin now, for he has forgotten her and is happy.
Who's that? Who's that?
Someone, suddenly, has put 2 cold arms about his neck.
On the flagstones, no shadow but my own and my dog's. Nothing. No one. Not a soul in the broad square.
He cannot see the cold arms clasped round his neck. It is not ghostly, this embrace, for it is palpable to the touch. It cannot be real, for it is invisible.
No! No! Let me be!
He clasps the hands in his own to tear them asunder, to cast them off his neck. He can feel the long, delicate fingers, cold and wet beneath his touch, and on the 3rd finger of the left hand.
The golden serpent! My mother's ring, which I'd know among 1,000!
Up, Leo! Up! Up, I say!
The student stands in the moonlight, the dead arms unseen about his neck.
There, there, boy. What's the matter, eh?
You're all right, sir. You don't look well, sir. Can I help you in some way?
Is there a hotel nearby?
Just across the square, sir. I'll take you.
And in a breath, suddenly, the cold arms are gone.
You lean on me, sir.
I am most inordinately grateful to you.
From that moment, he tries never to be alone.
There, sir, have that one on me. To your good health, madame. Yes, yes, it is, as you say, indeed a lovely day. Lovely.
He makes 100 acquaintances. He starts up if he's left by himself and runs immediately to the place of company.
Have I ever told you of the time that I seduced the wife of the English ambassador to the court of the King of Bavaria? I have? I see.
People begin to think he is mad.
I am not mad. I am a genius. A genius! And a metaphysician, even. I can see into things, into the life of things, in a way that would amaze. That salad that you're eating, sir? Can't you hear the lettuce leaves screaming as you tear at them with your teeth? That piece of chicken that you're devouring with such relish, madame, is positively hysterical with laughter.
No, 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 I beg of you, please don't go, please don't go.
In spite of all efforts not to be alone, One night in the city of Cologne, on some idle pretense, the painter strolls into the street to find the street is empty. The dog begins to howl. And then, for the second time, he feels the cold arms.
About my neck.
The dog slinks away from him with a piteous... He leaves the city of Cologne, still travelling on foot, money nearly gone. He joins travelling hawkers and gypsies. He walks side by side with beggars and labourers, talks to everyone, will not be alone, but do what he will, he is often alone.
And it is now a common thing to feel those cold, wet arms about my neck.
Autumn, winter, early spring. Money nearly gone, health utterly broken. He draws near to the city of Paris. He will reach that city at the time of Carnival.
Surely of all times during Carnival I need never, never be alone. I may get my health back, my gaiety. I could resume my old profession there. Once more earn fame and money by my art.
Carnival, yes. Soon the long, dreary roads are in the past. This is Paris, the city, as everyone knows, of light and gaiety. Paris, that city of which he has dreamed so much. Paris, whose million laughing voices may succeed in exorcising his phantom, perhaps. And the lights dance before his eyes. The music dances. It's wonderful. No more darkness, no more loneliness. A mad, joyous crowd shouting, dancing, laughing.
What's going on here, monsieur?
It's the opera ball, monsieur.
I must buy a ticket at once.
You may do so, sir. Over there.
Merci mille fois, monsieur. I have just enough, yes, for a ticket of admission. There.
Merci, monsieur. Enjoy yourself.
I shall. Excuse me. Enough. Here to hire a domino to throw over my shabby clothes.
Merci, monsieur.
I don the domino and the carnival cloak. At last I feel my old gaiety returning.
Hey, mademoiselle. Excuse me.
Oui, monsieur.
Come dance with me.
No, monsieur.
Come, I will not be refused tonight. Come, dance just one waltz.
Monsieur is a little drunk, perhaps.
Drunk? Not I.
I think perhaps so.
I am a stranger in this city wishing to sample the hospitality for which Paris is so famous.
Monsieur.
Tell me, where is your famous hospitalité? See? I'm making jokes. My old light-hearted spirit that I thought I'd lost forever. It's come back to me again.
You're certainly merry, monsieur.
Come dance with me, then.
And, brooking no refusal, he whirls her off into the throng. They dance and dance until the little Parisienne is wearied out.
Oh, no more, monsieur. I beg of you.
Her arm rests on his shoulder as heavy as lead. The other dancers, one by one, drop away. The decorations look pale and shadowy in that dim light, which is neither night nor day. A faint glimmer from the dying lamps, a pale streak of cold grey light from the newborn day.
I must leave you, monsieur.
No, I beg of you, don't leave me. The brightness of your eyes has quite died out. How white your face has grown.
Bonsoir, monsieur.
As I hold you in my arms, the shadow of your face looking into mine. Even the music has faded now. No music but the beating of my heart. The cold arms around my neck. I cannot escape them, I know that now. They will not be flung off or cast away. I can no more escape their icy grasp than death itself. They've all gone, all deserted me. The ballroom is empty. But all I can feel is the touch of your fingers, cold, icy, and the ring like a serpent which eats its own tail. Well then, little Parisienne, let us dance. I'll no longer shun your caress. No. One more waltz then, even if I drop down dead.
One more waltz then. One more, then silence. The lights all go out now. There. And after a while, the gendarmes come in with a lantern to see that the hall is empty.
Damn this dog. Can't you get rid of it?
Oh, shit. Follows us everywhere.
Wait a minute. There's something lying there.
The body of a student who has died from want of food, exhaustion, and the breaking of a blood vessel. He was an artist.
In The Cold Embrace by Mary Braddon, dramatized for radio by Christopher Hawes, Mary Braddon was played by Stephanie Turner and Yosef by Jonathan Firth. Gertrude was Alison Pettit, the father, John Hartley, the postmaster, Johan Meredith, and the passenger in the coach, Hugh Dixon. The woman was Carolyn Jones, the fisherman, Chris Pavlow, and the Parisienne, Tracy Ann Oberman. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The director was Marion Nancarrow.